Sipping on some Cold Truth.
That's right. That's your boy Shaboozy. I know you're a big fan.
Is it a boy or is it a group?
No, I mean, it's the guy, I think. I don't know.
Is he the gay guy that sings the gay black guy in the cowboy boots?
Again,
is that who it is?
I have no idea about his sexual orientation. I just like the song, man.
Well,
I mean,
yeah. I mean, I ain't really wanting details. I'm just saying. Some things are just obvious, right?
Hey, welcome back to the latest episode of Pints of Politics.
Hey.
Oh, boy. Thanks again to Comer Distributing for supporting the show today. Man, I tell you, No Dob Brewing has been throwing in some hits the past few episodes.
Yeah.
We are again drinking from their selection. This is Slurp Surfing.
I don't mind it at all. It tastes good.
Yeah, it's a West Coast IPA. This one isn't too hoppy.
No.
I think this is a good one.
I think I might just be getting used to the craft beers.
Yeah, now that you've gotten away from Bud Light.
Yeah, I haven't had too many beers.
But yeah, no, that's a good beer. So if you like IPAs that aren't too hoppy, check out No Dob Brewing's Slurp Surfing. Yeah. I tell you, these are some wild names. Because didn't we have another one of these? Little Slurp. In that pink can.
Yeah.
But man, that was good.
Little Slurp. Little Slurp might be one of my favorites.
Yep. So episode...
See, right back to 70. Gay Cowboys.
Episode 70. Again, we finally got out of the 60s, but we're still on what? Offensive lineman or
yeah, linebacker. Sam Huff, Hall of Fame linebacker.
Gotcha.
So, you know, we got to get a good little bit of love there. But I had it pulled up, and now it's gone. But
well, I just wanted to get you off the gay cowboy subject. Yeah.
He was not a cowboy. He played for the Giants.
Good one. Now, was he our age? I mean, like, you know, I mean, did he play when we were kids?
No.
Okay,
no,
he's way back.
Yeah, he's way back. Probably Lawrence Taylor days. Maybe.
Probably when the Giants were good.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
I can certainly look up his timeline. But
I'll give you some filler time.
Yeah.
You know, this past, you know, during the off session, we try to have a regular episode every other week. So we usually take the first segment to try to recount what we've been doing, how much trouble we're getting into and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So I'm gonna get to Sam Huff real quick before you get into that. He did play for the Giants and the Redskins. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 82.
Okay.
So he's well before. But did you see the story of the Dallas Cowboys player?
Yes.
He scored his first touchdown. On Monday Night Football, and then took his life.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
And curious to get some of the details in again.
His mom had just passed away. He was struggling
with that.
Before he got drafted. Yeah.
Yep. And from what I read, it was... 10:30 at night, he was, you know.
It's one of them things where you never know what someone's going through. And as the more I go around talking and everything, the more that I find it extremely impactful to know that suicide is impulsive.
Yeah.
And whenever you get to that point, you've just got to make it to tomorrow.
And I remember when you came, you brought that stat up about how suicide deaths where a gun's present,
yes,
and how quick that happens.
Little as 3 minutes.
Right. And so Marshawn Nealon, yeah, did end his own life. I can't remember when it was. It was, what, Wednesday or Thursday?
They say he texted someone and then...
Yeah, he had his girlfriend on the phone. And yeah, so I don't know. Yeah.
And thoughts and
prayers for sure to that family and the Cowboys family with his teammates. Again, a guy that you think...
has it all.
Right. And
and it doesn't matter. I mean, I can tell you, I never understood being depressed to the point of suicide until everything happened.
Right.
But I constantly battle that myself. What gets me through is knowing how I would want to tell my sons, what advice I would give my sons if they were in the situation that I'm feeling at that time.
Yeah.
Because, like I say, we're great at giving advice. We're often horrible at following it as fathers.
Yeah.
And just listen. So you just have to kind of listen to your own advice that you would give your child to kind of get you through. And sometimes if I need to talk to somebody, I won't hesitate to pick up the phone.
Yeah.
So I just got to get to tomorrow. That's the bottom line. And then those stats go up thousands of percent on being able to get through it.
Yep. Well, and I think I told you in private, you went the other week and spoke at York High School.
Yes.
Right here in York County. And I had some young people that was impacted by that, and just appreciate, again, those are some things that maybe you may not notice, right? You may not see the impact that you're putting on some of these kids, but...
Man, I'll tell you, I love talking to the kids. I feel like that is where my gift is. That is where my passion is. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, whenever I'm doing these other talks for conventions and everything else,
right,
that's to raise money for the foundation.
So you can go, I can go and talk to the kids,
yeah, right? Like, we spent $4,000, I think it was, on bracelets.
Right.
Well, we're already almost gone.
Yeah.
I spoke 8 times in 3 days last week. And in Anderson County.
How much do these things cost?
So we're getting them down because we're buying so many. We're getting them for like 40 cents a piece, okay, or so now. But still, you got to think, like, York High School is 2,000 students.
Oh, yeah. It's true.
So I spoke at all these schools in Anderson District 1. And whenever I finished up, I'll tell you the one thing that really surprised me at Wren High School in Anderson. Shout out to the staff and the administrators at Wren High School. I spoke for the first time because it's 3 sessions in one day there with that one high school. And whenever I spoke the first time, it was the first time I ever had a student come up and ask, could they put hands on me and pray for me?
Oh, that's right. You told me about that.
And, you know, I always have kids come up and tell me that they're going through things, but that happened. And then the next session, totally new group, another kid came up and asked if he could pray for me. And then on the third group, the same thing happened. So it never happened before. But then 3 times at 3 different sessions at one high school,
yeah,
I had teenagers praying for me. And then I got a message the next day that over 20 teens had came forward seeking help after those 3 days in Anderson. Wow. So I know it makes a difference.
Yeah.
But the point is I want the teens to know. And that's where I feel like that's what gives you joy. Right? That's what makes it worth it whenever you're accessing something traumatic and something that you know is going to wear you down physically.
Right.
Is to know that it's going to make a difference in someone's life.
Well, and, you know, I was talking to someone this past week about, like, man, how do you deal with, you know, all the criticism and those types of things of the job that barely pays you anything?
Yeah.
Right? Talking about the elected official stuff. And I said, you know, I like in politics, you know, in this sort of parallel to golf, right? You can shoot 100, 110, but you have 1 or 2.
125, baby.
But it's that 20-foot right to lefter that you made on a putting green. Or
it's that one Happy Gilmore shot.
Yeah, you know, it's just that 1 or 2 really great shots that make it all worthwhile and brings you back to the next time you're going to go play golf, right, yeah, and hack it up. It's very similar in politics where – you can take all the bullets, you can take all of the criticism on social media and those types of things, but like what you're doing in schools, right? And you see a little bit of that impact that you're making on a young person's life, and you're like, you know what? That's what brings me back.
Yeah.
So
And I didn't know. Whenever I got involved in politics, I kept saying it was just a calling.
Yeah.
You know, I found it funny because I didn't have a campaign manager. I didn't have anyone to help out. And then here come this guy I'd never met. And just saying that he felt like he had a calling to help me.
Yeah.
You know, and then after I got elected, I even said, I don't know what God's got me here for. But then after everything happened, I'm grateful for the opportunities. I do fear that if I'm not in the position I'm in, will I still have the same opportunities at times? But I do know that just having the position gives me a little bit more name recognition or being able to get the word out a little bit better.
Yeah.
And that I'm grateful for.
Yeah. Well, looking back on the past 2 weeks, this was the week leading up to Halloween and then this past week. 2 weeks ago, I was on what I joked around as the Brandon Guffey...
travel schedule.
Yeah, travel schedule, because I was running to you know, Charleston to participate in a telehealth conference and then a legislative panel the following morning. And then after that panel... discussion, went and had some meetings while there in Charleston, and then went up to Greenville to do another sort of conference and legislative panel in regards to tort reform and insurance. So those were fun, educational as always, you know. Wednesday evening.
You still blow me away how you can take such a complicated matter and seem to understand it so quickly.
Well,
like, I'm good with like the little hits here and there, like the little trees, but yeah. You can take the forest at one time and then it's like you understand it, and then you're able, and they're not even related. You know, you got insurance ad hoc and tort reform, then you've got your PBM reform and your medical, and then you're working on AI. Why I'm the one who's always fighting on AI, you know, it just blows me away.
Well, and then don't forget to mention Abish Renourishment and how do we deal with the tidal floods in at IOP in Harbor Island. But no, I mean, it's just these little buckets that you get into, and literally, you know what it is? It's just trying to help somebody.
Yeah.
And usually that's what it is. It's a constituent call. It's someone who puts you in touch with someone. Like, hey, maybe you can help this person because you're from here or whatever. That's usually what happens. But yeah, the telehealth stuff was good. I got to sit next to Senator Davis on the panel. It was me, like I said, Senator Tom Davis out of the Hilton Head area. Senator Dion Tedder right there from Charleston. Bill Herb Kirschman, who's in the House with us from Bluffton, Mark Smith from Daniel Island, and Lee Hewitt out of Georgetown. So we just talked about all things telehealth and then also just the rising cost of healthcare, right? So looking at how telehealth can help the state reach rural districts where rural hospitals, that economic model, it just doesn't work, right?
Healthcare in general is failing so bad. Yeah. I mean, even with our insurance, I think I had to pay $40 as a copay to just do my prescription refills.
I know, and I posted something earlier today just trying to get, you know, we have passed the medical pricing transparency bill out of the House now for two terms, and it sits over in the Senate, and I'm thankful for Chairman Verdon in Medical Affairs. He did get us a hearing on it, but
it didn't come out of the hearing?
Well, we adjourned debate on it because, and it was literally the day before crossover, when we had crossover. So trying to work with some of those senators to just get a hearing on that bill and get it to the floor.
And in the Senate, one senator can kill a bill in committee.
Yeah, correct. So I just think we have an antiquated healthcare model. It doesn't have to be one size fits all. Right, I do think that
it shouldn't be so cumbersome. It's no different than our taxes. Like, everything should be a lot more simpler.
And pricing transparency is the first thing you got to have. You got to know what you're getting and how much they're charging for it. Right?
Yeah.
You know, instead of
why is it higher if you've got insurance instead of lower?
And again,
it should be lower prices with more people involved.
And I overheard someone saying, and this came up in a conversation, why aren't we asking when you go into a facility, hey, do y'all have a really good doctor for this surgery or this type of procedure? Instead, you're asking, are y'all in my network? Right? Yeah. And it's just simple things like that where we've gotten away from the care part of delivering health, right? So it's some of those just essential questions I think we need to start asking ourselves. And we will be asking, right? And it won't just be this year because it's going to be a process.
Well, and people don't realize how much that it takes to get something going. And I understand people want the stuff done right away.
Yeah,
because but they're it hurting, takes right? to truly understand, because all of these problems that we've got, that we've ran into or that we've caused, comes from, and I often say it, is from electing people like myself. We cannot be an expert in every subject. If we're talking banking regulations, I'm not your guy to sit here and make the decisions based on banking regulations. Right. I have to trust people that I'm listening to get through it.
Yeah. Or just go to school on it, right?
Yeah.
You bring in some of the experts on both sides of whatever the issue is.
Right. And it would be so much greater in politics if you could just run and say, look, this is what I'm good at. This is what I'm going to focus at. These are the changes I'm going to make. But instead, as soon as you don't, then they say, oh, well, you don't care about election integrity, or you don't care about life, and you don't care about this because you're focusing on things that affect everyday citizens.
Yeah, so... the telehealth summit was great. It was great to meet some of the folks involved in that. I got to meet Palmetto Care Connections. Kathy was great down there. Got to sit next to between one rural health nonprofit and then another one, and so we just had some really good discussions over a dinner. And I just think that's an opportunity where you can form those relationships.
And our borders should open up a little bit.
Where?
To where you can cross borders.
You mean like Joe Biden?
No, I mean like within the United States, within our states.
Yeah.
Especially like with us being a border county.
Oh, yeah, correct.
You know?
As far as the imaginary state line of where. Yeah. So, and again, I think there's a role for traditional health insurance. I just don't think it's for, you know, an annual checkup.
Right.
Or some of those things. I think it's more of that higher level catastrophic care.
That's the reason. Well, the prices have went up so much because it's being guaranteed.
Yeah.
Which I think somebody might have warned people about that with Obama. I'm just not sure. Yeah. But,
And that, but
the price goes up
because
everyone's mandated to have it. And those prices are just going to continue to go up because so many can't afford it.
Yep. And again, I get the idea of trying to balance that pool of high risk and low risk folks for healthcare. You want to get the younger folks in and paying so it pays for your aging population. Problem is, young people don't want it, right?
I just want catastrophic insurance.
Correct.
Like you get cancer or something, like you want insurance to go through those big things. Mm-hmm. That to me is worth paying a couple hundred dollars a month for.
Yes.
Just as insurance.
Yep.
As a banking policy.
And you're out of pocket. Cash for your smaller stuff.
Right.
Yeah, correct. But again, that's where some of the problems came in with the ACA and its adoption and how it regulated or just eliminated some of those markets. And again, that's getting a lot of attention right now because we're in the government shutdown, right? And what's being told to us by, you know, U.S. Congressional folks up in D.C., the Democrats are telling us that we're trying to take people's health care away when, no, we're following what the 2020 Joe Biden extensions and additional subsidies of, you know, they removed the 400% cap on poverty for those who got Obamacare subsidies. They raised it.
I found it ridiculous whenever I own my own business and I was trying to get insurance and I'm thinking I will get insurance and offer it to my employees. Well, it was too expensive. So it's like, okay, well, I need to reach out and I just need to get insurance. But because I only paid myself $50,000 a year, then my kids were automatically put on the state where they got the CHIPS, Medicare.
Really? Yeah.
Or Medicaid. I don't know what it was. It was a pain in the butts what it was. But they wouldn't let me pay for my own insurance for my family. I could pay for me and Melissa.
Yeah.
And the only place I could really go through was the Obamacare site. And that really frustrated me. It's like, look, I can afford to pay for my insurance. I understand y'all have got me listed as poverty level, but I've pretty much paid all my debt off. So why can't I just pay for my own insurance?
Yeah. And so I think that's what I put out this morning was, you know, just trying to highlight why can't we have medical pricing transparency here in South Carolina? That it is happening, and that's what I posted there. Dr. Smith started a surgery center of Oklahoma, and he, a little backstory to this guy, he's an anesthesiologist by trade, and he got sick of dealing with whether it was Medicare or Medicaid reimbursements, and then also private healthcare insurance, where he just said, you know what, I'm not doing this no more. I'm not playing the game. And so he got a group together, set up a brick and mortar surgery center of Oklahoma and started taking cash.
Oh, and that's what Dr. Sick does, like a monthly program here to where you just pay a monthly fee.
So, and that's what I posted. And I think I shared it as well. So if folks want to go to Pints of Politics page, they can go click on that link. It's amazing. There is a button that says pick your surgery. And so if you've got general surgery, fracture, whatever it is, you can go pick whatever the surgery is. Yeah. And, you know, say it's a $2,500 procedure. You use that quote to then go and drive the price down with your own health plan here in South Carolina. And that's what we talked about in the Senate hearing a week or two ago. That's chaired by Rick Scott out of Florida. Is he said, hey, man, even if you can't use this or your health plan won't pay for you to come to my center, just use my quote on my website and use it to drive down the price.
And if we put it in simple terms for people like me to understand. And me.
I always say, if
we did the same thing with, let's say, gas, fuel.
Yeah.
You got cash credit price.
Right.
Let's say credit is insurance. So imagine you go to fill up and it's $3 for a gallon, but if you're paying with credit, it's $3.15, right?
Yeah.
But imagine if it was $3.15 still, but the government was guaranteeing and they're actually getting paid $5 per gallon.
Right.
Right? As opposed to you just carrying cash and paying for it yourself because you're still paying the same amount that it would.
Right.
It's just if you're using the insurance, you're covering the other people that never pay anything.
Yeah, and so pricing's, you know, the pricing transparency, I think, is essential first step. I also think we've got to figure out, and we've talked about this thing until it's, you know, we've beat it to death, is PBM reform, pharmacy benefit managers, that vertical integration, allowing, you know, the insurance companies to own the PBMs, the PBMs then to own their corporate cousin, which would be the rebate aggregators that they offshore, so they can do things outside the scope of a state law or a U.S. federal law. It's insane.
You lost me at PBM, but I'm just going to vote whichever way you tell me to on PBMs.
But I mean, so it's just those types of things that we've got to reform. And I'll stop at this. Whether it's medical pricing, whether it's PBMs, whether it's just general healthcare insurance reform, transparency is the common thread in all of it. And we need more of it in these businesses, in these practices, so we can drive prices down and take care of patients and consumers here in the state.
Right. I mean, that truly is a Republican principle.
Right.
Competition drives lower prices.
And again, when we're talking about, here's another thing. When we talk about all of this stuff, whether it's health insurance pricing, drug pricing, all of these things, we're also talking about driving down these prices to our small businesses, right? Like you just talked about.
Yeah.
And I was talking with Jason here in town. He pays $3,000, $4,000, his business does, for insurance for his handful of employees. And he's like, man, that's just a big line item for us. Imagine if you could cut that by 25, 30% by inviting in private competition, free market ideals.
Well, I mean, there are church groups.
And again, that just gives more money back to small businesses where they can invest in their people, inventory, cost of goods, you know, all those things. So I just think it's a big economic boat anchor to our small businesses right now. And until we get serious about reforming it, it's going to continue to be an issue.
I agree. So we've got a lot of reform coming up.
Yeah. This episode of Pints of Politics is brought to you by Comer Distributing. Comer Distributing Company is a wholesale beer distributor located in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Founded in 1971, Comer is a family-owned business that distributes beer and other beverages to York, Chester, Fairfield, Lancaster, Kershaw, Lexington, and Richland counties.
Well, speaking of, I mean, we had the DOT Ad Hoc Modernization Committee
week. Yeah, we had another one of that, and I know you and I and David Martin all represent York County on that thing. Yes. So
I was not able to be there. I was in D.C. at this time.
Yep. Hey, but I tagged in for you, you know. but yeah, that was down at Trident Tech.
Off the top rope.
It was, I think that was this past Monday even. And, you know, another good time to hear some testimony. Again, the DOT secretary, Powell, was there, talked about some of the issues that has been discussed at prior meetings.
I just feel bad for him because he come in, he's actually doing good, actually making changes, trying to bring things up to speed. And here we are complaining about what hadn't been done the past 30 years and how we're going to change it out. And then you got people running for governor that's like, oh, we're going to name whoever that knows nothing about roads as head of DOT.
Yeah, right. But no, I think he's the right man for the job.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everything I've seen, he's a professional, he's knowledgeable. He's willing to sit there and take whether it's a hard question or criticism and listen, you know? And so I think we've got a good guy there at the top of heading up DOT. And then we heard from a lot of folks, you know, and again, we heard from the bike walking trail.
Always.
Folks. But again, I think for new roads or new
design.
They're
saying it takes people off the road.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially in some of your urban areas. We also heard from some folks from City Council of Charleston, Berkeley County Council. I think we had a Berkeley County, the county administrator.
Didn't they vote down the penny sales tax in Charleston?
They did for that 526. Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, when you talk about that.
With all that tourism.
Yeah.
Like if I'm a tourist city like that, yeah, we're going to consumption-based tax.
Right.
We're going to let all the people that are coming in to visit to pay for our stuff to keep our taxes lower.
Yeah. And one takeaway for me from this past week's meeting was when I heard from the folks who were giving us testimony, they wanted to make sure this wasn't going to be a top-down solution, right? They wanted to make sure that the folks in municipal government and county government, like, we're listening to them, right? And I totally agree with that sentiment. You and I both think the best government is the
closest
local.
To the people.
Yep. But I do think we need to address the issues. We have to link back up. Let me back up a second. For the folks who have just started listening to us when we talk about DOT, we have the fourth largest road system,
third or fourth largest, but 80% of our roads are ran by the DOT, by the state.
They're state owned. And so I think because you have neighborhood roads here in Rock Hill that are owned by and maintained by the DOT, you have local officials, whether they're sitting on city council or they're sitting on county council, approving new neighborhoods that have 50 and 100 rooftops with really no regard for the impact of public infrastructure, right? Because they're like, hey, that's a state road.
We do have the option of concurrency, though.
And I'm not indicting anybody for this, but I've heard from the few meetings that I've attended, some folks complain about local roads, whether it's John's Island, trying to get from John's Island back, you know, onto Maybank or whatever, which is a nightmare at 3 o'clock down the Lowcountry, or it's the 526 connector down there. Or, I mean, hell, man, try to get up. I think I shot a picture and sent it to you where I was sitting I-26 West coming out of downtown Charleston, trying to get up to Greenville, yeah. I believe. And the whole map was red. And it was like 3 o'clock. And it's that 26 junction where Ashley Phosphate and 52. So it's a bunch of people jumping off, heading east into Berkeley County. I was sitting there for 29 minutes, man.
I mean, let's talk about my district.
It's maddening. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 49, Buster Boy Bridge. Like, try coming in there.
Yeah.
I mean, we did dinner there the other night at 7 o'clock, and it was still bad.
And so, again, you know, we talk about politics as a team sport.
Isn't that more of capitalism deciding, like, if I live in that, I'm going to move. Right? Like, I'm going to the country. Right. And then your property values will come down because the demand goes up.
Yeah.
Or you end up like a New York City, Philadelphia, where you got more people coming in.
Right.
And then you've got to find these creative solutions to work with.
Yeah, or mass transit.
And a lot of those people don't even drive.
Yeah, correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do think it's something that capitalism will correct. Now, capitalism is not going to correct whenever you're driving 75 down the interstate and, you know, you're barely hanging on because you're in a 1970s vehicle and you hit a pothole that just jerks everything out of line.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, again, we say that politics is a team sport that goes for state and then local governments working together.
But we can't give the roads back to the local governments. I mean, everyone says, well, let's just give them back.
But we can't force them on them. You can't do it. And I don't.
They have to ask for them.
I don't think I would support that, or maybe I don't. It sounds like you wouldn't either. But it's got to be optional. Give local governments options to take roads back. But from what I heard at the meeting, I ended up talking to four or five mayors and then also a city manager. They all said, look, we'll take some neighborhood roads back where it makes sense as long as there's some recurring dollars or some mechanism to help maintain that. Because currently, if they take over 20 miles of neighborhood roads, how are they going to afford it? Right.
I mean,
and again,
yeah, I mean, the amount of property taxes that we put on our residents, and that's the number one complaint. We can talk about income tax and everything else.
Yeah.
But whenever we start talking about property taxes, those are decided by your local county councils.
Yeah.
For one, if we come in and we cut property taxes, no one at the state ever gets credit for it. Right? Like, it doesn't matter what we do. It's going to, the county would be like, well, we cut property. No, you were forced to do it because the state cut them here.
Yeah, right.
But it just becomes an issue because then they're just going to continue to raise them up. But there's got to be some way to where I say, look, we're not going to cut your property taxes, but now you got to maintain these roads.
Yeah. So, this DOT committee, I mean, it's just dynamic, right? There's so many possibilities, different ways we can skin it and try to find solutions. You know, one is the current structure of our DOT, is it the most efficient, right? Do we need that commission anymore, right? Because now that we have a secretary.
Do we need to have a committee about the committee that had the committee on the committee?
Right. It's like a study committee for the study committee. But no, I mean, and again, I'm not saying let's do away with it, but that got brought up, right? Another one is doing sort of P3 public-private partnerships when it comes to roads. You know, we're considering right now working with the state of North Carolina because they have that tollway up there. Well, they're talking about wanting to extend, make that a more robust system. Well, guess what? That means they got to come in, I think, 3 to 5 miles into South Carolina. So that's making us rethink how do we do that? You know, we've got to work interstate and planning the design of that. So that's going to be coming in, you know, in the Fort Mill area, south of Carowinds Boulevard, and going ahead and start separating the toll lanes.
What about
from
the Carowinds Exchange?
That's all part of the discussion too. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yep, that's all a part of it.
And I'm all for that. Yeah. Things I don't like are, you know, we talk about, there's a big push right now to claim data centers are making everybody's power rates go up. Mm-hmm. And they think data centers should pay more, or data centers should pay for the infrastructure for the lines to run. My concern is, okay, are you making that mom-pop business pay for infrastructure? Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, what if they close down? Now they should have to pay all this. Okay, or are you going to charge every business a fee every time they have to close down?
Right.
Like, that, it just doesn't make sense. And I don't want to get to that point to where we're saying, okay, this, if this business wants to open up, which honestly, I mean, we can look at the Scout deal. A lot of the money that was in that Scout deal, they say we gave them all this money,
right,
is building the interchange and building the roads and the infrastructure that even, just like with the Panther deal, even though the Panthers are not there, now we've got all that infrastructure there for other stuff to go there.
Yeah, correct. And, you know, thankfully, that Scout deal is, it looks like it's progressing pretty well off 77 if you ride by there any. And a lot of that stuff, I think that incentive package was tax credits and some other things as well as infrastructure spend. I don't think you and I had to vote. Did we vote on that?
You didn't have to vote on it. I had to vote on it.
Okay. Again, yeah. Folks.
And I voted, it is one of those things that I voted for that if now I would probably vote against, but the only information I had to go off of in a tight time frame was a lot more people that you have to trust what they're telling you,
yeah,
instead of verifying. And the one thing that I wanted to make sure that we had was clawbacks, which,
yeah,
I learned from being on county council with the Panther deal whenever it went south.
How
clawbacks are important.
Yeah.
And we had those with Scout. And everyone says, well, this is for, you know, electric, and what's the viability of this? Like, my job is not to look at the type of business that it is, but look at the amount of jobs and the income it's going to bring in.
Yeah,
how well will it go for,
yeah,
citizens?
And I remember, what did they call, I can't remember what the term they used for Scout, but they sort of likened it to BMW. You know, it,
yeah,
was one of those
the
larger,
economic impact.
Yeah, it was one of those larger projects, economic development for the state. That was, I mean, basically game-changing, right?
Even whenever you look on the Georgia line, whenever we didn't get, I think it was Rivian.
Yes.
And they went right across the border.
Yeah.
But we did benefit a little bit from the other businesses that opened up to service that. That's the way BMW is. Like, there's a reason we have Michelin.
Yeah, right.
Right down the road, yep. You know, with the BMW.
Boeing. And
yeah.
Yep.
So all of those things open up all of these other businesses that don't want to have to sit in traffic for 4 hours. Thank you, DOT. That want to be closer.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so a lot to learn. I know we're going to get back in Columbia, I believe. I think I think the plan is break up into 3-4 committees is what I'm hearing. And we're going to break out and sort of have those sort of subcommittee or those breakout sessions to where we can, you know, compartmentalize certain issues into, say, subcommittees. And I'm just saying subcommittee, not officially. But so
whenever it comes to roads in South Carolina, there's no one more knowledgeable that we serve with. And you can probably say that you're just as knowledgeable. But Gary Brewer knows the ins and outs.
Yeah.
Whenever it comes to our highway system. And he's going to be the person that I'm going to ask questions, I'm going to lean on.
Yeah, he's a very knowledgeable consultant. Yeah. You know, so, I think he, well, in his past
experience. I mean, you're more of the contractor, like you're more hands-on, right?
Yeah, he's more pinkies out, you know, yeah. In theory, this is how it should work. No, but seriously, no, Brewer's very knowledgeable. He's been in the business of
whole life.
Of building roads, I think in some prior professional career, yeah. You know, jobs and stuff. So yeah, very knowledgeable. He was sitting next to me, so him and I were talking a lot. And Robbie Robbins, former commissioner.
Robbie does? Oh yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah. So both of those guys are going to be, you know, just a wealth of knowledge. Depends on what the question is. Who you'd go to.
It was one of those things I was just happy to be included on.
Yeah.
But I've never served on, you know, the local, even whenever I was here, I wasn't on the county council. I wasn't on anything to do with roads.
Okay.
I was dealing more with zoning.
Yeah. So I sit on RFATS,
mm-hmm.
which is our, you know, transportation MPO. And so, you know,
do we need all those groups?
That is, I do think somehow figuring out a way where the MPOs and the COGs.
Like, I still wonder what the hell do we need a COG for?
Well.
Like, the only thing whenever I served on the COG was for them to collect a bunch of money.
The two listeners have fallen asleep at this point of the episode. But no, but the patchwork, right?
Yeah.
Trying to figure out how you can streamline those bodies to where can COG membership be a part of RFATS or some a subset of? Because those questions got brought up, right? COGs usually deal with the rural parts of the areas of our state where MPOs deal with the urbanized sections. But, you know, there's a role for both to play. But it's a good question because it got brought up. So, yeah, a lot to do there from the DOT. What else were we working on?
Well, you got put on another ad hoc.
I tell you, this has got to be a record. Yeah, third ad hoc in a year.
I'm on two.
You know? And it's either, I joked around, you know, they either put folks who are willing to work on ad hocs, have some knowledge or expertise of it, or yeah. Just suckers, you know? And sometimes I struggle to know which one am I on any given day. But no, I'm kidding. But yeah.
Or those of us that are actually down in Columbia quite a bit taking meetings.
Yeah.
Because they know that we're going to be down there.
Well, and so, again, we've talked about this in a prior episode. We had a tragic event happen here in our community where, you know, some teenagers were on a golf cart and they were struck by a car head on. It ended the life of Marley Drew Sullivan, who, you know, we've all learned about her story. The Sullivan family has started a foundation and they're raising money and awareness on some of these issues. And in having, a lot of conversations with Ben and Stacy, I started asking questions and they couldn't answer them. And basically it was just gaps in service, so to speak, when juveniles commit crimes, what happens, right? Because there is that notion that we want to rehabilitate them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's natural. And we should do that. But there's also the other side of that coin of
getting justice for the family.
Yep. And serving the family when they lose a loved one,
mm-hmm.
in the act of a crime. And so just learning about that personal story got me talking to people in the legal profession, in the family court system. And at the same time, our friend Brandon Cox was looking into DJJ and some youth crime issues. And I even told him, I was like, don't even get me started on that. And we had several discussions and he said, hey man, you're going to be on this ad hoc committee. And I'm like, no, I don't, you know, I was like, no, man, let me give you information from York County. Let me help you in an unofficial. He goes, nope. I served on the PBM.
Yeah, you're now you serving on the this. DJ.
And it's good. It's just going to be a lot of work. And I know it is. I'll be up for it. But looking at, we've broken this thing down into some short-term goals for the committee.
Will it include foster
care
and stuff? Because I've got some issues to bring to you on that.
It's going to be DJJ, DSS, the family court system. It's going to be a lot. It's going to involve our public education. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's got so many tentacles, man. It just stretches to all facets of life here in South Carolina, especially for our youth. But the short-term goals are this. If you've got violent offenders, kids under, you know, who are 15, 16, who are committing crimes with guns, they shouldn't have a gun anyway, right?
Right.
How are we addressing those issues, for one? And two, what sort of accountability do we give versus how much grace do we give, right? And so I think a lot of what...
Yeah, I mean, like Jelly Roll was caught up in the juvenile justice system.
Right.
Constantly. Like, and you could see how he's rehabilitated.
Right.
You know?
And those are great stories. Far too often, though, you find... where it's someone who is 17 years old who has been caught, charged, and released of 10 gun crimes.
Yep.
Right?
Which is why gangs want you at a young age.
And so it's those types of things where we need to start asking hard questions about, first, we've got to start holding repeat offenders, especially violent and with a gun, accountable. They've got to have some serious time. Because right now, when you hear of a 16-year-old girl who has 8 convictions, all with a gun, and she's still out on the streets,
yeah,
I'm like, wait, how does that happen, right? So that shouldn't happen. Those types of repeat offenders, look, I'm sorry, it's going to sound callous, they need to be in jail.
Yeah.
Right, there's a public safety component. I ran on ensuring that we have the safest neighborhoods we can here in Rock Hill. I can't say that I'm doing a good job of that if we've got an 8-time repeat offender who's been convicted of gun crimes still walking the streets.
Yeah.
And so it's that. I think that's going to be the first step in bringing accountability to youth justice. Secondly, we're going to look at what are some of the indicators? What are some of the factors that lead our young people to commit gun crimes at the ages of 13 and 14?
Well, I mean, I was a punk as a teenager.
Yeah.
Now, I wasn't going around robbing people with guns and stuff like that.
As a teenager.
But I was constantly getting in trouble. And you know, if I would have been charged for things, my life could have been completely different. But I also was smart enough to know... a lot of it was stemming from just this built-up anger and not having any direction moving forward.
Yep.
And not really addressing that. And I see that so much with these teens that are constantly committing the act. They might be victims of crimes themselves.
Yes.
But I don't want to take the approach of, oh, that gives you the excuse. Because I don't, I'm of the mind, like, I don't care if you are clinically insane or anything else. If you commit the crime, you do the time.
Right. And so that's a good point. Those are some of the things that we're discussing. And, you know, we talk about this every, I think every year when we get the Children's Committee, mm-hmm. where we get that little spiral yep. report, and we talk about and we look at the data points, a lot of what we see in there is, how does poverty affect our young people? How does a single parent or lack of stable parents or a stable home life, how does that impact our kids,
yeah.
right? And so those, that's going to be the longer term goal of this committee, is looking at those societal factors, looking at those non-determinants of youth crime.
I miss Ray Felder just whipping those stats yeah, out right. every time you'd bring up something. You know?
Yeah, and so after that DJJ, and you know, I knew I was going to have this meeting. I set up a meeting and went and visited Secretary of Education Ellen Weaver this past week. Sat down with her and her team, talked to her about, as the medical sub-chair, and just speaking for me and Chairlady Celeste Davis on 3M. We want to start, we talk about reaching youth so they don't commit crime. We also need to start, now I'm switching gears, I'm going back to medical and wellness and health. We've got to start getting to kids early, pre-K type stuff when it comes to eating nutritious meals. This thing of, you know, whether it's the obesity, diabetic, and you're 12 and 13 years old, we've got to figure out how we can get to some of those at-risk youth and start feeding them more nutritious meals. And what led me to the meeting with Ellen was, hey, a lot of the meals that our kids are getting these days, unfortunately, are at school, mm-hmm. right? They're getting two and three meals at school. And, you know, my challenge to Ellen was, can we do better than square pizza? You know, I mean, I used
attacked.
To love the square.
I feel attacked.
I used to love that square pizza too, man. But can we do better than that, right?
Yeah.
And so just talking to Ellen about, hey.
But they're just going to go to the vending machine.
Yeah, you got to get rid of those too. You got to start getting healthier.
Dude, every school, you know, I tell you, something that drives me crazy, every school I speak at, and I want a Mountain Dew. All they have is diet, and it drives
really?
Me crazy. Yeah, and that was something back, I think, with Michelle Obama. But yeah, the schools do not have sugary soft drinks in the school. Like, if you go to a vending machine, I mean, you still get maybe the snacks. I don't know, but I know I'm always looking for a Mountain Dew.
Yeah. Well, and again, and I don't have all the answers. I'm just saying, can we imagine a world where we're giving our kids something that's less on the sugar?
Well, the Maha. How about just remove the chemicals?
Yeah, more waters, more flavored waters, more. And again, I don't know what all the nutritious snacks are these days, but I'm sure they're out there. But giving kids, you know, Cheez-Its and Goldfish, you know, we got to be better than that. Go and rich. I know that's going to take probably some additional funding. But then we also started exploring, is there a way that our education department can then partner with our ag department? Man, we've got a lot of local farmers here.
Yeah.
And literally, this was the all-in-one hour-long meeting with Ellen Weaver was, I said, hey, Ellen, I'm going way outside the box here, but is there a way that we can partner with our ag folks, get local farmers selling to school districts, and then letting high school kids work in a culinary sort of program like out at Northwestern to start, like we used to have old canneries back in the day where farmers would bring their produce yeah. in, it'd be canned, put in mason jars and stored
give
whatever.
It out to the poor. Yeah.
Why can't we have workforce development in our ATC and in vocational around our state to start utilizing some of this stuff? Let's train our kids for the restaurant hospitality business. Why can't we do all these things? Man, we're in the South.
Man, we're not even training kids on how to be an electrician or a plumber. Like, we're teaching you how to get a license, or they want you to go work for somebody.
Yeah.
But in actually to do it, I mean, that it seems like such a trade that you shouldn't need a 2-year degree or have to pay this specialty. Same thing with welding. Like, you shouldn't have to pay all this money to learn how to
I agree.
Do that.
I said, Ellen, and I said, we are getting way outside of your scope and my scope, but I said, why couldn't we work with Department of Employment and Workforce? Why couldn't we work with our local school districts that have these vocational programs? I said, we're in the South. We eat, but we like to eat good. You know what I mean? Why not teach these kids how to cook, how to prepare food, how to store food, freeze dry it, whatever. Do it all summer when the harvests are coming in preparation for building a menu.
Call it a prepper class and you get Republicans and Democrats involved.
So I know I've gone way out in left field, but that's the great thing about this job is you have having these great conversations with folks. And you know, I left Ellen. I was like, hey, I know you're just in education. And I started talking about food. I said, but I said, is that possible? She was like, it would take some time. And I was like, well, let's get started. But it is good to hear there are some other folks who have been jumping into this space. Representative Patrick Haddon.
Yep.
You know, he's an agriculture farmer guy. So I got to have a conversation with him too. I have volunteered Celeste Davis to be part of the working group as well.
We're going to bring the guys that are going to be running for ag here.
Yeah. We could call it Fred, and I don't know who else is announced, but yeah, man, just, we've only talked here for about 45 minutes. Just trying to touch the high notes of some of the discussions that we've been having.
Yeah, and that's not even the stuff we got on the notes.
I know, but it is so far-ranging, man. I mean, yeah, just all over the place. But what about you, man?
Well,
you've been traveling?
Yes, well, I was in Rock Hill, I guess, the Halloween day.
Yeah.
Ralph had an event at Papa Doc, so I showed up there. Evidently, whenever I scheduled it, I was in a different time zone, so I was late whenever I showed up. But as I came in there, I'll tell you, hearing Ralph talk, of course, this is base. Did great there. What I took away, I walked in and I didn't realize.
Important question. Were you wearing your Hey Dudes?
No.
I mean, for folks who don't know, Papa Doc's is right out there on the river.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'm still more of a flip-flop. Give me some Margaritaville flip-flops.
All right.
And
was Ralph in Hey Dudes?
No. But I didn't realize that they were dressed up for Halloween. And so I just see Ralph. He's in a suit, you know? And then Elaine is dressed up, and she looks so eloquent. She's got this big old hat on. I was like, wow, like, man, she'll look beautiful as a first lady of the state, you know? And then I find out that she was dressed as Melania, and he was dressed as Trump for the inauguration. And I was like, okay, makes sense. But yeah, it was a good look for her.
Yeah.
But of course, all the women were very inviting to him. Everything went great. And then I ended up flying out to D.C. for the RAINS Act. So the RAINS Act is the bill that we were talking about, eliminating 25% of the regs year one.
Oh, right.
And then putting a sunset, having to come back. We passed it unanimously last year very early, right out of the House. It's been sitting in the Senate. Hopefully it will get some movement. And what I found was our bill of the RAINS Act is actually the ideal bill. Because it includes everything that many other states are having to take one step at a time.
Right. Now, this is what we've passed earlier this year.
Yes.
Sitting over in the Senate.
Yes.
I tell you, we got a lot of good House bills sitting over there in the Senate.
Yeah, well, whenever you spend 6 weeks talking about tort reform, it's kind of hard to get a lot of things done. But I'm sure the Senate's going to have some of their bills come through, too. And I think it's Tom Davis that has it in the Senate, if I'm not mistaken. But it is a great bill. That will actually, you talked about cutting red tape, cutting cost.
You're right.
That's one of those things that's going to help so many South Carolinians that probably won't get heralded as this great bill, but I think will make such an impact. And anytime as a business owner, you're cutting red tape.
Yep.
That's good. But we're not just talking about business owners. We're talking about industry professionals as well.
So in talking about that being more efficient, I did have an update. You know, we consolidated healthcare agencies this past year.
Yeah.
Where we took mental health, DAOTIS, and
was this the Health Star?
2.0, actually. But yeah, we consolidated three agencies into one. You know, it's now the office, and I'm going to use the acronym OIDD. it took behavioral health, mental health, DAOTIS, which was our substance abuse and all that kind of stuff. What was the other one? I can't even remember off the top of my head. But anyway, I'm already hearing that there's some efficiencies going on just by bringing in those workforces all under one roof.
Instead of everyone having to bounce back and forth between so mental health and drug abuse.
Yep. And so your HR folks, your payroll folks, even your legal, you don't need all these separate teams now that you're all under one roof. So I think we're going to get a report right when we come back in 26 for session. And I'm probably going to highlight that in my first subcommittee, because I know there was some concerns by some about how this consolidation wouldn't do anything and it would empower the new director to be, you know, South Carolina's version of Anthony Fauci. But I'm happy to report.
I mean, the guy did kind of look like
we are. We are, you know, we are streamlining costs there. And that's going to deliver savings to the South Carolina taxpayer. So,
yeah.
But anyway, back to the RAINS Act, to what you were doing.
I did the RAINS Act. That was with the Capital Leaders Group in D.C. Flew out at 5 o'clock in the morning, then I had to drive down to Columbia. I met with Dr. Warren Binford from University of Colorado, which has 2 decades of experience on stopping child sex trafficking and online exploitation. Mm-hmm. So just to offer me some of the statistical and data, because, you know, I'm an emotional person. Like, I need to have that data and stuff in front of me,
right.
And I don't have the time to sit there and dig for that stuff. So professionals like her that have that experience, I mean, it's not something that you pay for. It's not something she's getting paid for. It's right. Just a passion. And she was speaking at University of South Carolina, so wanted to meet with me to go over some of these data points on what we are going to move forward with in 2026. And I'm still debating on... We only have so much political capital.
Right.
Let's be honest.
Oh, I know.
Like, so if you can get a bill ushered through in a session, that's a huge accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
But once you become considered the expert in that field, like, you may have 2 bills come through in medical this year.
Right.
Right? Because people are viewing you as the expert now.
Yes.
If I was to get 2 bills on tech and AI to go through... You know, that would be a huge win, but now I got to look, okay, I got 10, and it's not just mine. We've got other people, and it's like, which one is most important, which one's going to make the biggest impact?
That's a great point.
And how do we move forward?
That is such a great point. I have like a top 10 list that's now turned into a top 20 list.
Yeah.
And, you know, in talking with our staff, I say, guys, we got to pick 3. That one, we think is going to make an impact. 2... Is it reasonable to think the Senate's going to take it up?
Right.
Because we are.
Because you have to consider that. Do you want to waste all your time doing it if the Senate's not going to hear?
Right. So, and again, that's just the process, folks. And
oftentimes you get bashed because you didn't take up something that you already know the Senate's not going to pass. And yeah, you could, but it's like, okay, well, if I could knock out these others that take a chunk out of it, then let me go ahead and get them through.
Yep.
You know?
But again, I understand the frustration sometimes because. State government, it doesn't move as fast as I want it to, much less...
Especially not South Carolina, not the way we're set up.
And let me bring up a point on the fentanyl stuff. We had parents of children who had died from a fentanyl overdose or a fentanyl poisoning. And when we were freshmen, there was a lot of York County parents. And you and I were like, gung-ho, man, right?
Yeah, let's stop this fentanyl trafficking bill.
And we got it out of the House and it died in the Senate. Yeah. And it went 2 years like that.
Yeah.
And
you and I finally got it done.
You and I got so frustrated about it. And when we finally got it done, I was like, you know, yes, pat ourselves on the back, but the whole time these families are...
Well, I mean, and you have situations such as Aiden Anderko, who died after the bill had died in the Senate. And, you know, you look and you're trying to talk to his mother to explain why we can't charge the person...
Who sold?
Who gave these drugs to him? That is a drug dealer crossing state lines.
Yeah.
Why we can't charge him as a murderer? You know that homicide by fentanyl.
Yeah.
That's a tough thing to do, and especially as a parent that understands that pain and wanting that justice.
Right.
And I'm sure, like what you're doing with you know Ben, with Marley Drew.
Oh yeah. You know.
Um, that right. It's just those things that whenever you realize those problems. Now, the second bill I filed after Gavin's law was to get rid of our tattoo laws. Like, our tattoo laws that are outdated, antiquated, ridiculous, complete overstretch or overpower of government. I wanted to get rid of that. But whenever I look at the impact of, would I prefer people to own their own data as we're transitioning into this new world? Would I prefer that stores have to make sure that they're designing a product that is safe for kids online if they're going to target kids? Or do I want tattoo shops? And it's like, which one are you going to spend your political capital? So I've even gotten to the point now where whenever people call me and they have an issue, I start thinking about it from the state level. And it's like, well, look, I could be that politician to sit here and say, I'm going to submit this for you. I'm going to chair this for you. I'm going to push for it. But you know what? It's not on my top 10 list.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to lie to you, because whenever it comes to whether I'm protecting kids or doing something else, I'm always going to choose protecting kids. And that becomes the issue. And I'm like, okay, well, you might want to talk to this person who could be a good voice that could help usher it. And I will help them in any way I can. But I think that you need to talk to this person and let them
usher. That's always a good plan too, I think. That's a good alternative, where you find someone who's got a passion for, say, the tattoo issue, where you can sort of delegate to, especially as, you know, we're in our second term. A lot of times there's folks in their first term who are looking
for something to show, like, hey, I want to eliminate these small business regulations. Right. Well, this is a perfect example of government overreach
on a small business. Because remember, we were freshmen, and we were looking, we're like, this is all we do? Yeah. You know what I mean? Or like, we had a little more time, right? We did a lot of listening and learning, but we were always wanting to get involved and get in the game. I have found same. That's a good opportunity to bring a first term, like, hey.
Well, and you get to learn a little bit about how the system works, and regardless of whether people like it and they just want you to go in there and fight, the problem is you have so many people that are disingenuous that just say that they're going to fight for you and they file a bill and then they never do anything.
And then they go...
Right. And they're not really, in my mind, and I could be wrong, but in my mind, I don't feel like they're being genuine in their approach to move forward or to actually progress.
Just file a bill and move
on. Because they're still trying to get one or something through. So I want to look at it from, and we learned that as freshmen, we came back from the Family Policy Council event and the Help Not Harm bill.
Yeah.
Did not have a single one of us members' name as the sponsor, but we spent a week learning about the language and working on the bill to then become advocates and work with the person who filed the bill. Right. Yep. You know, and we learned that it's not about getting credit. It's about making lives better for our citizens.
Yeah. You make a difference or make a point.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times we choose...
Get a t-shirt.
Let's make a difference.
So, make a difference or make a point.
What else you got going on?
Well, I did meet... Nayland Haley, Nikki's son, started Young Republicans in York County.
Yeah, I saw that.
So he's recruiting anyone that's 40 and under.
I just missed it.
To come in and work. Yeah. Same here. But, you know, I think it's important whenever if you don't follow Nayland on X, I would highly recommend you follow him.
Yeah.
It's obvious he is not his mother. He's not his father. Just as I'm not my mother, I'm not my father. You know, everyone's got their own opinions. But I like the cojones on him. Like, he just says the way that it is. And, you know, I'm blunt like that. But I think he's well-educated in a lot of his responses as well. So I think he hopefully will turn around a lot of this Young Republicans around here. And then, of course, this week, you know, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the open seats. So you had Bobby Cox's seat went in a runoff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you had Diane Hardy from I think she was with Mom and Pop Alliance and Republican Women. Well respected, well named, or good name recognition in the area. And you had Steve Nail out, who's a professor in Anderson, but lived in
the
district. And that would have come down 20 votes.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And Steve Nail lost to
Diane Hardy.
Mitchell.
Or Mitchell.
Yes.
Okay, Diane Hardy's mom, Pop's line, Diane Mitchell was the Republican.
Yeah, correct.
Federation of Women.
Yep.
Getting the names mixed up. And so, apologize to either Diane, though I doubt that they listen to this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, and so that was the runoff.
Yes.
And so Diane Mitchell has won...
by 20 votes.
Yep. Is there a general?
Which, I mean, really, you think about it. You had Jack Stott, and you had Reggie. Like
that was a 4 or 5 person.
Yeah, originally in there.
Yep.
Jack ended up endorsing Diane.
Okay.
And just if he had 80 votes, if those people showed up, like, that's enough to swing a race.
You know what? That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a very important, and that's what I've always explained whenever people say, oh, well, you'll hear that this caucus is backing this person and this caucus is backing this person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that, and I haven't seen it to where in a Republican primary that the Republican caucus really backs one individual,
yeah,
because ultimately we want any of them to become Republican caucus members as running as, yeah, Republicans. So it makes it very difficult, and then some people feel betrayed because they don't feel like they get the backing,
yeah,
of the caucus, you know?
Well, and a lot of times I think if you have several folks run for an open seat on the Republican side, we as elected officials, I mean, we can make our own judgment and phone calls to these folks. I tend to stay out of that stuff.
I try to stay out of it too.
Because I'm going to work with whoever the people of that district elect.
Right.
With no preconceptions.
Now, granted, if I would have got involved in that race, I would have caused more harm to whichever candidate I got involved with.
Right.
Being in Greenville, you know, it's a 50-50. Some like me, some hate me,
yeah,
up there. And then we also had RJ's seat. So in RJ's seat, you had a pastor, and the name is slipping away from me. Is it
Laskiger or something like that?
Yeah, Lassinger.
Yeah.
And he was running against Duncan, who did the writing campaign against RJ
really?
For the general election.
Okay.
This
tells you how much I keep up with.
But I want to point out something, because these third party groups that get involved do not represent the candidate.
Yeah.
And it's very important to say, and oftentimes, and what I wish people would do is come out and say, this is not me, I had nothing to do with this. Oh, right. But that is just not the case. And
wait
it
a minute, what are you referring to? And did something occur on this?
Yes.
Because you're going to have to educate me. I don't pay attention to all that stuff.
Okay. So there was a mailer sent out against Lassinger that was sent out, I think, right before the vote. And this is a man that's been a pastor in his community for a while. And, you know, I was in D.C., like, trying to watch some of this, but whoever this letter is that, or sent this letter out, or mailer out, it basically attacked this man's character, which Duncan had not been going after the man's character at all.
He'd been keeping on policy.
They were staying above reproach on their in their fighting to represent Republicans. They were not splitting this into a caucus issue. They were just,
yeah,
you know, they were staying above reproach. And this one mailer comes out and basically assigns Lassinger's motives as if I'm not mistaken, it was, you know, just like we had that Palmetto Truth come out and say that, oh, well, they want death penalty for any woman that's had an abortion. Now, if I've been a pastor in my community for 20 years and you get a mailer, or I'm not even a pastor. If I'm the hellion that's been in my community and you already know how my views are and you get a mailer, now you might not have even planned to vote. You're not paying attention to the runoff, but you get a mailer that says that I want to kill any woman that's ever had an abortion, then wow, that's going to get you up off the couch and get out and vote.
Wow.
And then that was a very close race. Like, so these third parties that get involved with these narratives, these flyers that say, oh, they wanted to pad their own pocket, they wanted to raise their own pay, it's important to look at who is sending the mailers and what the intent is behind it.
Yeah.
Because there's many people that don't want us together, that want to paint, even though, you know, Duncan might not have had nothing, I have no doubt that he had nothing to do, because it'd be illegal if he did.
Mm-hmm.
But he had nothing to do with this mailer that went out. And yet that alone probably
got attributed to him.
I would be willing to bet that that one mailer cost him the election.
Well,
and those are problems.
And we've seen some of that to where some of those third-party groups that may have been aligned with the candidate of which the literature is right. attacking, they do it just to invigorate their base.
That was the old RJ.
Yeah.
Thing.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like...
So you could play victim.
Man, like, this is dirty.
I firmly believe RJ used to run ads against his own members just to incite and to rally up people to protect.
Right.
But just be aware that if it's coming from a third party, you probably can't trust it too much.
Yeah. So, and some of those shenanigans, yeah.
Which, I mean, look, 90% of the voters are truly uninformed because they don't have time to follow things.
I mean, we serve with
people that are uninformed. So to think that someone that's not an elected official to be uninformed is not a stretch by any means.
Did he just say that to my face?
Present self included.
What'd you call my mama?
I said, what? All right. So we're going to cover what's coming up. Because I don't know if it'll be 1 week, 2 weeks before we come back.
Yep, and before we get off the special elections.
Okay.
We had the one over there in Lexington. We had the one in Greenville. We also had the initial runoff election down in Somerville of our colleague Chris Murphy, who was resigning from the House January 1 of 26. They had that special election, I believe.
I don't know the members in there.
That went down to a... I remember their last names. The folks who made the runoff was Hill and Ford. So I know there were, I think there was three or four running for that seat. And that, I think that runoff's here in...
Brian Hill and Greg Ford.
Yep. So.
And it was a narrow margin.
Yeah, what was it, like 41?
Oh, no, that was talking about Diane Mitchell only winning by 1%.
Oh, yeah. This one was like, I think 41 to 38 or 42, 43 to 38.
Yeah.
But those top two are going to a runoff. So we'll see how that pans
out. That'll be a tough one.
And so again, when we come back in January, we're going to have, what, three new faces?
Yeah, at least. I mean, we've got others too. I keep seeing people's name come up that they're running for State House, but I don't know where they are.
There was another one who won a special election during the off session.
He was at the last DOT committee meeting in Sumter.
Oh, really?
So I actually shook his hand, sat beside of him, introduced myself, but I cannot remember his name right now.
Well,
and no offense, I apologize, but I'm just horrible at names, and it takes quite a few times of.
Hey, we're both guilty of that. We'll sit there and exchange pleasantries with folks while we're in session. We'll walk off. I go, what was that person's name again? You'd be like, man, you know, I forgot too.
No, I'm just like you know better than to ask me. Like, usually I ask, Heath will be like, you know such and such, we got lunch with them. And I'm like, no, I don't know them. He's like, yeah, you do. You were talking to them about this and this and this at this location and at this time. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I do remember them. He's like, yeah, see, I told you know
so
them.
So that's the way my brain works, but I still can't tell you their name.
He wants me to tell them that. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm more of the guy. Have you seen the woman? There was a social media post, and it's a woman. She's like an office manager, and she hires two new people. So she sends them out on these crews, and they're working with the guy. And she asked, she was like, okay. She's like, so how did you like the new guy? And he's like, oh, man, he's clutch. Like, he's done good.
Yeah.
And they're like, she's like, well, which one are you working with? He's like, I don't know. So he like had to describe him. And then she goes to the new guy like 3 weeks in. And she's like, so how are you liking working? He's like, man, like we're like best of friends. She's like, so which one are you paired up with again? He's like, I don't know his name. Like, this is his description. That's more me.
That's in a nutshell work at the State House.
Yeah. Like,
from time to time.
If I know you, I know you. And I've got that trust feeling. But I don't always know the name. Or I can't remember the name.
Yeah.
For whatever reason's going on.
Yep. So, and I know we're all over the place. This is like Shotgun Podcast.
I didn't take my ADHD meds. My bad.
But I do want to also mention, after the telehealth panel that I was on, I went to Greenville, and we were talking about tort reform, dealing with, I believe it was like the Insurance Association. And one of the takeaways on that one was stiffening DUI penalties.
That's something that's got to be done.
And I was sitting next to Roger Kirby in the panel. He's a Democrat friend of ours out of Lake City. And I turned to him and I said, I thought we had that in the tort reform. And that was one of the sections that got pulled out in our tort reform that we did pass. So that is something, stiffening DUI penalties.
I mean, we can't talk about being tough on crime and allowing repeat offenders.
Correct.
And look, I've got a friend with numerous DUIs.
Yeah.
That has to blow in his vehicle every time he starts it up.
Well, and again, this is something that I think is not partisan. It's a common sense issue. No one wants to be on our public roadways with the high risk of someone who's drunk driving, sharing our roads.
I mean, we got teenage drivers.
And what one thing
that was one of my big fears on Halloween. I was telling Cohen, I was like, look, I want you off the roads.
And this was one of the things that I was like, I turned to Roger and I said, hey, man, that's common sense. Yeah. And it drives down insurance premiums for the auto carriers and for us as consumers. And so I made a bunch of calls on that.
And there's so many rules about you got to stay within the camera of the car.
Yes.
Like your feet must be shown. Like if any one thing's wrong, then you get out of the DUI. Yeah.
So talking to a lot of folks on that issue, I'm pretty confident that's going to be S1 or S2 this year. So it'll be coming out of the Senate. Senator Adams, Brian Adams, out of Berkeley County, who
former law enforcement.
Yep. He has sponsored legislation. It's coming up, and they're going to probably get it out. And I
great
would say,
example is finding the right person to lead.
Yeah,
an issue.
Right. Lead the effort. So
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's coming over to us, and I don't see that really being that contentious in the House either. We need to get that done again, not only a public safety issue, but also for consumers of auto insurance, and then also the insurance carriers who want to come to our state and compete for our business.
Right.
So,
well, speaking of being contentious, we had an executive committee meeting with the Republican Party, York County, this week, which I am a EC within that, and I won't go into detail because I don't know what the rules are about sharing stuff, but I will let you know that it is very likely that we will all have challengers up here, and that there will still be endorsements as what's been done in the past, and so transitioning to that, you got a fundraiser on Wednesday.
Yeah. It's just a local get together. Just trying to hear from, I think we've got 40 or 50 people coming. It's just a drop in, 5 to 7. You know me, I don't like big speeches or anything. But you know, it's just an opportunity for me to talk to folks, let them know what my priorities are, listen to them. I want to hear what their priorities are, what's affecting their households, their businesses, here in Rock Hill. And then besides that, there's a lot of other work going on because I'll do this local fundraiser here. And then we got a bunch of local community events coming up here at York Tech. Are you going tomorrow?
Yes. Legislative.
You do have delegation.
Yes.
Yep. Reception over at Comer.
Yep.
So that'll be fun to, you know, interact with some business leaders here in York County and Rock Hill.
Are you calling your fundraiser session a session with sessions?
No. I'm just saying, hey, come by, shake my hand, you know, let's hang for a little while. No, it's nothing major. I know Dave and Martin's having...
Well, a fundraiser as well on Thursday.
Yep, yeah.
Which I won't be able to be at that. I won't be able to be at either one of your fundraisers, unfortunately. Wednesday, I've got the Can't Look Away screening with Mothers Against Media Addiction, Fort Mill School District, and my nonprofit, Less Than Three.
Oh, nice.
Which is a movie that was, which I'll participate in a small panel beforehand, but a movie that is showing the parents who have lost children's fight against big tech.
Yeah.
So if you want to help both of us, send him a check and show up to the screen. I would say that would be the way to do it. Yeah. But I do want to stress the importance of all of us up here in York County, I believe, are going to have challengers. And I believe that it is important that if you do support us, please support us financially. You know, I'm not big on fundraising whenever I don't have an opponent announced.
Yeah.
But we can't wait till the 11th hour either. So we need to start getting some of those donations in. And then our first... event or our first fundraising report will come out right after January. So whatever we can get in before the end of the year or before the first of the year will show, you know, whether we've got serious support or not.
Yeah, and more importantly for me is if you want to support my campaign, DM me, get in touch with me. You know, my email, cell phone's out there. And let me know you want to be a neighborhood captain. If you're willing to go knock on 50 to 100 doors,
that's more important for than my any campaign, mayor.
Is much more important to me and helpful to the campaign. Than a check.
Because a mailer is what, $5,000, $4,500 grand. But you might be sending that out, but you cannot replace that true advocate that's knocking doors for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just knowing that you have the community support of volunteers, that lessens your time of running all over the place where you could focus
efforts. Because we're going to be in session.
Well, and as well, you know, you and I always talked about during campaigns, I remember Thursday, Friday, and Saturday were days that me and my daughter and a close-knit group of friends would go and knock ourselves.
Yeah.
But if you have neighborhood captains who are knocking doors and helping you throughout a campaign, you know, that lessens some of that burden to where you can get to other neighborhoods of normally you wouldn't have got to. So,
and you know,
it helps Dave, build that team.
Yeah, it does. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize. No. David's got, you know, Ian's announcing to run again, mm-hmm. third time. She's always done really well at fundraising. His event's on Thursday as well in Fort Mill.
He even gave it a schnazzy name. What do you call it? Like red, white, and blue or something?
Red, white, and bluegrass.
Yeah.
So he's doing the Jeff Duncan thing.
So, folks, you know? I will not have a band. I'm probably a little more low-key than most. You know, I don't come out to walk out music and smoke and flames. You know, I'm just going to be there at the front door just thanking folks.
The cop. Right. Just point, smile.
Right. The Martin
thank
event.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey.
The David Martin event in Fort Mill may be like that WWE event, you know, where mine's more like Pete.
Well, I'll
like,
tell you, his supporters are ready to go to fight for him.
Yeah.
So they are gearing
mine
up.
Mine may more like the like an NPR hour-long sort of interview, you know? It's like, wah, wah, wah. But
meaningful conversations. But I won't be able to be at that one. I've got to fly back to DC, speaking at a Catholic university on Friday on the dangers of tech, along with Dr. Mary McCraw, which I testify before Congress.
Let me interject here, folks. There is one thing that I want to talk about, and you have brought the issue, you've raised the profile of it. And one thing that I know all of us as parents run into, and I know I have told my personal story before about this, my daughter, when she was 6 or 7 years old, her friend started getting phone, iPad, a device.
Yeah, right.
And that's where I started feeling some of the pressure that she was feeling to feel she was part of the group, part of, you know, she wasn't being isolated, right? And I told her back then, I said, look, you're not going to get a phone until you're either driving or you have a job. And I think it's important that parents, you know, that it's okay to not give your kid a device at 7 or 8. That is perfectly okay. I would recommend it. And I'm not saying it's easy. It's hard because my daughter dealt with the sort of the isolation, the peer pressure of not being in the group that could play this online game.
Right.
But it's worth it. It is damn worth it because my child, I think, is more conversational. She is more versatile in a lot of things, and it pays dividends. Just you got to trust your parent gut instinct on that. You know, and I appreciate you have raised the profile of that. But there's a lot of folks out there like me. I don't go and brag about it. You know what I mean? And I never would really even talk about it until all the stuff that happened with you and your family. And I was like, you know what? Holy shit. I'm so glad that I kept a device away.
Your gut was right.
From your 7 or 8 year old.
Yeah.
And so whether you're a parent, a pastor, a teacher, folks who are around young people a lot, it is 100% okay. And the thing to do by keeping those devices out of the hands of youth until, I would say, at least 16 or 18.
That's just the statistics, and this blows me away, and I may have mentioned this before, but we're just talking about sextortion.
Right.
Not all the other crimes.
Yeah.
Right? But the statistics at the end of last year were one out of 17 teens had been a victim. That's every middle school, every high school. The stats now, whenever I was talking at Denver University last month, Thorne showed up, and the stats now are 1 in 5.
What?
1 out of every 5 students have been a victim of sextortion, whether that's traditional, sadistic, or financial sextortion.
Yep, and so, again,
all these bomb threat calls that are being called are being done by kids that are being sextorted. Like, this is where it is coming from. This is the sadistic sextortion point to where they gain the dirt on this kid, then they convince them to commit a crime because they are a minor, and that is what is causing all of these fake shooting calls and everything else.
And again, folks, I would say this. The reason why you keep a device that can access anyone on the planet who's an adult is you don't know the risks. You don't know the people who they're getting in touch with. You don't know the people who are reaching out to them. There's a lot of risk and temptation for that a 12-year-old isn't prepared for.
Yeah.
And that is the key, right? I mean,
And the algorithms.
Correct.
I mean, the stories of someone's watching YouTube Kids, and then the next video shows up, and it's a choking challenge or a Tide Pod challenge, and the kid dies because they're not paying attention. They're thinking this is just normal. And that's one of the reasons, like with my job, you know, I work for CyberDive, which has the Aqua One phone. Mm-hmm. And if anybody wants to see it, it's nomorenudes.com, but it works as a DVR. So it's helping teach your kids to make smarter decisions while you monitor, even at a younger age. But the stats still show the detrimental development to the human brain at that age with too much screen time.
There will be medical and scientific research done that will demonstrate the negative impacts of social media, not just on
the
brain activity, but I've read a few articles and heard some folks, doctors, talking about podcasts or talking on podcasts about literally the physical dimensions of the brain changing due to the impacts of overuse or, you know, the screen time.
It's like more than 2 hours a day is definitely
correct
a huge detriment.
Yep.
And that includes even watching, like zoning out.
Yeah.
You know? But I would compare it to today. Look at, because I was around some teenagers and one of them said something that was very anti-Semitic. Look, growing up in South Carolina, I never grew up, knew anyone Jewish. Like, and I've made comments in the past that I never knew was a racial slur just because I'd never had anyone to say, hey, that offends me.
Oh, right. Right.
But now you're seeing this big push come back, especially since Charlie Kirk's assassination, that is a huge anti-Semitic push going against all Jewish people. And the conversation I had with the teenager at the time, it's like, okay, so what you're saying is about one person that happens to be of this faith. You cannot judge an entire group of people
broad stroke
that like way. That. I mean, that's essentially how that was the problems of the past. Those were the problems of the past.
Well,
we can't go back down that road.
And that's a good point, especially with young people, right? Is allowing them some grace to, when they say something ignorant and stupid, and sometimes even hateful.
Yeah.
That you give a little bit of grace where you give that opportunity to make it a teachable moment for them and you don't indict their character for the next 20 years.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so
we went from that cancel culture to now I feel like kids are doing, I mean, I don't know, the Halloween costumes. There were so many people that were just doing blackface and just doing things. They were doing like Charlie Kirk with the blood coming out of his neck. Like they're doing things just to incite a reaction. Because online, they're taught, good or bad,
clicks.
The reaction is what matters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
God.
And you know, Well,
and again, social media. Don't let your
look. I'm one that is on social media. I utilize, I weaponize social media to get my point out. I don't do some things like what was posted that Kimberly, or I shared it, but Kimberly Long had posted where you got one guy setting up all these other sites and then using them to write an article for this site, then use all these to pair it. You know, that is manipulation.
AstroTurf.
I don't do those. So, yeah, AstroTurf or fake grassroots. I don't do stuff like that, but I do utilize social media, and I've been known to be a prick on social media, and I have to tone it down sometimes.
Yeah.
But I refuse to delete because I'm going to make mistakes.
Yeah, right.
And kids need to see that they are going to make mistakes. Now, I always try to come back if I think that I was wrong and apologize. The problem is most people that are telling me I'm wrong, I'm just telling them they're idiots. So it just escalates quicker than
the folks who are telling you you're wrong are more wrong.
Your wrongness is worse than my wrong.
Right.
But so and now only thing we got left is we got our football games, but
yeah,
want to talk about the statewide races at all? Is there anything else?
I know we had a highlight this past week, you know, Nancy Mace in the Charleston Airport. We don't have to discuss it that much, but, you know, interesting events.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I don't, you know, we've talked to Nancy a lot. You know, we know her, we see her at events and this, that, and the other. You and I have always said she's bold.
Yeah.
You know?
She's got bigger balls than anybody else.
And, you know, I just wonder, and again, I understand she doesn't want to back up and apologize, right?
And I'll, to be fair, I seen the headlines. I have not looked into it. Like, I haven't watched the video.
Yeah.
But I do know, as an elected official, how things get twisted and thrown out of proportion. I don't know if that's the case here or not.
I don't know either. I know that, I know from a periphery, you know, she was supposed to have security when she arrived at the airport to basically escort her through to the gate where she could board the plane. It wasn't there, or there was a miscommunication. And I know and understand that could be frustrating, right?
Well, especially you get threatened
right.
quite
so
as much.
I think
I've been around her twice while she's been assaulted.
Yeah. And so I think security is of the utmost importance, especially for her.
Mm-hmm.
In her position, I'm not saying it's not important to you and I, but most folks don't even know us, right? So we could walk through a crowd for right. the most part. You know, they're just going to think you're Conor McGregor, and they think, you know,
hey, I got recognized in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware by some teenagers. I was shocked. I was like, so, what in the world?
Right. So, but they ain't trying to beat your ass, right?
No.
So I get you can have security lapses and have the frustrations of that, right? But what you can also have is still have a respect for the profession and not bless them out and drop 18 F-bombs.
Fair? I try to keep it like in single digits of F-bombs.
Right. And so
at all times.
And again, if I was talking
we're
to
talking
Nancy,
hourly, right?
I don't know all the details. I wish there was, you know, an opportunity where she could have said, hey, look, there's serious lapses in security or, you know, the professional expectations there at the airport that need to be addressed. Also, I could do a better job, right? I could do a better job by...
I think we would all be better if we all did that.
Yeah, right. And right? So I'm still hopeful that privately, maybe she reaches out to the guy or two that she blessed out. I don't need to see that publicly, but I do think she is also combating the other side of people just trying to rake her over the coals.
And whenever you're constantly attacked, it's going to make you defensive.
That's what I mean. And that's what pisses her off, and that's what she's fighting against. So
yeah. And look, I will say this. Like, if there is a difference between me cussing you out and you just happen to be standing there and me talking to someone else on the phone.
Yeah.
And me just talking about what an idiot you are.
No, that's the same.
One is like a bless your heart.
Wait a minute.
But with profanity.
All right.
But the other is directly at
what you're talking
your
about is similar.
Yeah.
It's not the same. Okay.
Okay.
I had to talk to Brandon Cox about this.
Look, it in order to stay true to form, I apologize. I was wrong. It is not the same.
Heath Sessions is not an idiot. Okay, but he walks away, I'll be talking again.
Whenever he leave, I'll be talking again. It's my grandmama's change.
So governor's race, man, I still think it's four candidates, you know, Mace, Ralph.
Well, and then you had Alan Wilson Pam being brought before the Senate. I didn't even see what that was about.
Yeah, just standard oversight on his office.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was just standard oversight.
Yeah, their budget. Every 7 years they look, yep. And Mace was there. But yeah, this upcoming week, what you got going on?
Ooh, you had to ask. I fly out to DC to talk at the legislature, and of course our local events, the screening of Can't Look Away Wednesday. So yep. I know Monday we got the legislative event.
Yep.
Tuesday there's something else. Wednesday is the screening. Thursday fly out, and then Thursday's also my dad's birthday. So I'm sure as soon as I get back in town, we'll do something for that. And then following up the next 2 weeks, I've got, you know.
Well, let's just stick to next week.
Yeah, a lot of travel coming up from then.
We do have the,
I need to work on my book. I'm four chapters behind because I've been traveling too much.
Jeez. We do have the legislative thing here locally. We also have a public health thing in Columbia on Tuesday for some of us. Wednesday, I have
opted out of that one.
That Department of Juvenile Justice ad hoc committee is in session Wednesday. I then come back up to Rock Hill for the local fundraiser, and then Thursday morning I head back down again for another DJJ ad hoc committee meeting. So
did that this week too.
Yeah. Full, you know, a lot of work to be done for this part-time job.
Well, I mean, I think the more you care, the more full time it becomes.
Yeah.
Right.
And a lot of windshield time allows me to get on the phone and.
I wish it was the same for me. It is if I'm in my Audi. It's not in the bus.
Oh, right.
Or the Jeep because I can't really talk. So, like, there were kids down there on Wednesday, whenever I was driving down to meet with the professor from Colorado, and I drove the bus down. Because I knew that the Easley High School kids would be coming down doing their tour. And I was like, okay, well, they'll see the bus. Like, that would be something memorable for them.
If
I happen to run into them, it allows me to share the story. So I drove the bus down. But then I realized all the calls that I'd planned to make while I was down there, I couldn't take.
You need to get
And then the same thing for the way back.
You're going to have to get, like, noise canceling.
I've got the Bose noise canceling headphones. It does not noise cancel what I'm saying, though. It noise cancels what I'm hearing. So other
hey,
people
but one could
me
dream, couldn't they?
Yeah. It would be nice to like put some, you know, some, what do you call it, the dynamat on the inside to make it a little bit quieter. So if anyone wants to donate to the nonprofit, that would be
there you go.
A good way to do
there
it.
There you go.
But, well, you know, we are at what, an hour 40? So we are long today.
Yeah, I know.
But it's 2 weeks.
And no breaks, man.
Yeah. So listen to it half this week, half next week. Like, do your thing. Just make sure you're at the fundraiser.
Yeah.
But we got to thank our sponsor, Comer Distributing, once again.
Yeah.
Everything that they do.
And we're going to be able to do that in person tomorrow because he's the one hosting the Chamber of Commerce event.
Have we had any additional sponsors reach out? I don't know. I don't do the website.
We need to do a better job. On the
or
business
y'all need
side
to do a better job of this, like, reaching out
of this podcast. You know, like the business end of this thing.
Yeah.
You know, we are just.
I will keep Heath to quit making F bombs if y'all will sponsor us. I will rein Heath in.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But yeah, seriously, thanks again for Comer Distributing for offering up the tasty beverage, supporting the show.
Yes.
Slurp Surfing by No Dot Brewing Company. It's a West Coast India Pale Ale or an IPA.
It's good.
And it's something that you and I can enjoy and drink.
Yeah.
It's not too hoppy.
And for all those that think that we drink three or four beers just because we take breaks.
Yeah, right.
This was continuous.
Right. Same can.
Yeah.
All right.
But and look, please continue to support us. Pintsandpolitics.show. support He Sessions for House. Support Vote Guffey. What is your website? Mine is voteguffey.com.
Mine is heathsessions.com.
Yes.
Got to keep it simple for the...
Yes. And know we're under attack here in York County. They don't like the sunshine, as Heath says. So y'all have a good day. Thank you.
Thanks for listening and watching.